I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome aboard. Now, this is another one of those days when I'm coming to you from the road. I'm on the road. I'm in Connecticut now. All right, so a couple weeks ago, I was in St. Louis, Missouri, and now I'm in Connecticut, and I'm coming to you from that location. Now, today, sometimes, you know, we go lighthearted, and sometimes I tell stories. So last week, you indulged me and let me tell you a little of my life story, and I was very, very happy and pleased that people texted me, emailed me, and told me that they enjoyed it, and it helped them to think about their own lives. And that's really, that's my whole purpose here. No matter what I do, is to get you to think, right? Ask your own questions and do your own things. So something that came up is, you can see, I try and weave themes through my programs usually. There's sometimes it's a very obvious theme, and you could see all the connections. Other times, not so much. But today, I want to talk a little bit about religion and the value it has, the power it has, and the fear it invokes in some people, and why. You know, historically, you can get both sides of this argument from people. They will tell you that religion is bad because religion has caused hatred, it has caused death over the years. People were, if they didn't follow the policies of whatever organization it was, religious organization, they would hurt people, like the Inquisition. We always think of the Inquisitions in Spain back, I think it was the 1500s or 1600s, and they were, you know, the church was very, very cruel. I hear people, you know, I'm a Roman Catholic, and I hear people say all the time that they can't go to church because of the things that some priests have done, you know, and haven't been, there have been bad popes and this, that, and the other thing. And all of that is true. There is truth to all of that. But the reason being is because there are bad people everywhere, in every walk of life, in every organization, in every group, whatever. There are some bad people. There are people that take advantage. There have been some very benevolent kings, haven't there, across history? Very, very good. King Arthur was one that comes to mind, right? King Arthur. And then there have been some very, very bad kings who have taken advantage of their position, pharaohs and czars and all that kind of stuff. So this is not my come to Jesus moment with all of you. It's not about any one particular religion, at least in the beginning of my conversation here, and then we'll go from there. The whole idea of religion is that it provides some coordination of people, right? The churches, the synagogues, mosques, Buddhist temples, all of these different organizations have provided some kind of guidance on appropriate interaction with other people. Because as we can see through policies that are taking place in America right now, when you let people just do whatever they want to do and there's nothing to hold anyone to account, then you see people will just do horrible things to other people. You see crime go out of control. You see sexual assaults, murders, people getting pushed onto trains, robbed, beaten to death, etc., etc. So you see how humanity can get out of control. So historically, you have always had some type of I'm going to go all the way back to maybe not Cro-Magnon man, but let's say early humans, when we first started to gather together in groups, and we were they would migrate around different areas following the animals or following the food, wherever it was, and they didn't have permanent settlements. They still had to find a way to have everyone interact in an appropriate way, right? And that has developed over the years into different forms of government, different mores about how we should get along. Our whole ethics are built up around what is the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do. So in terms of religion, and you know, people can make these discussions, they can come out and say, like I said, well, a religion is bad because look what it did. Religion is bad because look what it's doing with terrorists. Now, that does not mean that everyone who is a Muslim is a terrorist. That's, of course, that's ridiculous. But the idea is that a lot of people who are Muslims have a certain variety of that religious belief that tells them they should go out and kill everyone who is not a Muslim. I mean, we're seeing it every single day. We're seeing it all the time. We're seeing terrorist organizations. We had it here in our own country. But does that mean everyone who is a Muslim is a terrorist? Of course it does not. And if you want to stop the conversation about a topic, you accuse somebody of something outrageous. You know, that's the old, you know, when did you stop beating your wife question. Well, I never beat my wife. You know, well, this is the thing. Oh, you just want to say that that all Muslims are terrorists. No, that's not what I'm saying. So I'm being crystal clear about that, right? And that's why I talked about the Roman Catholic Church. Through the years, there have been excellent popes, and then there have been popes who have taken advantage, been bad, been corrupt. But the thing about that, and maybe I'm jumping ahead. I am jumping ahead there. But the reality is, even in the Catholic Church, it has still maintained itself for 2,000 years. The basic tenets of the church have not changed. What has changed is the interpretation of the religious tenets of the Catholic Church by people who are in charge, or people who want to take advantage, or people who want to do the right thing, or people who want to do the wrong thing. It's in the interpretation of the religious tenets and underpinnings, just like it is in the Muslim religion. So I'm saying not all Muslims are terrorists. That's ridiculous to say a thing like that. But there are people within that religion who have taken the tenets of Islam and they have twisted it for their own uses, just like it happens, because that's what people do. Human beings do bad things, right? And we have to find a way to control that impulse to do bad things, because unfortunately, it is part of us. Now, in my classes that I teach about criminal investigation, I talk about there's a couple of things that motivate people. There are drive crimes and there are want crimes. Right? So a drive crime is based on something that is an internal drive, like the sex drive. All right? That's when you have a twisted sex drive, and when it plays out in a person who has a psychosexual problem, and they turn towards violence and they use sexual expression as violence, you get serial killers, right? They can't stop those thoughts from coming in their head. That is a drive crime, right? Well, we have also want crimes. This is like you want something. So you want money for drugs, or you want money for whatever that you don't have, and you do burglaries. But if there's a cop car on the block, I don't think I need to do that crime, right? So that's a want crime. You want something, but it's not worth getting yourself in trouble. A drive crime, on the other hand, you can't really stop yourself. You could put it off for a while, but eventually you go back and you kidnap another prostitute, rape and murder her, and dump her along the beach in Long Island or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So we see where these people come from. Well, it's these impulses, these negative impulses that people have that have to be controlled, or we have a chaotic society, right? And I guess even from the times of early man, as we were migrating around following the antelope or whatever, or following the crops that were growing, that's where we would move to and eat and move on, people started to realize if we're going to be together in groups, then there are some members among us that are going to do bad things. Some people in the group are going to notice that, hey, that woman or that child is left unprotected right now, and I feel like attacking and doing something to them. And the protector of that woman or that child is not around. Maybe he's out hunting a gazelle or whatever. So they take advantage of that situation. Maybe they do it at night and they attack the protector man and they take him out, and then they attack the woman or the child. These people are among us. They've been with us since we're human. Now, if we want to look at religion for that, I guess we could say if we go back to the beginning, there was, Adam and Eve, and everything was great. And then sin came into the picture, right? Now, I'm not going to turn this into a religious kind of thing in that way. I want to talk about religion in a different way. But that's really what we see in most religions. There was good until sin was introduced. And sin is brought to us by humanity, not by God, right? Humans brought sin into the picture. And once you unleash sin, then it goes wild. And that's why it has to be controlled, right? So going back to my teaching, I teach about want crimes and drive crimes. But one of the things I also break down are the emotions. Let's think about the panoply of human emotions that are out there. What do we feel? What are our feelings? And we are feeling driven, but we, as human beings, we have two components. We have intellect and we have emotion. And if we allow one to be too strong over the other, we can have problems. Think of think of Mr. Spock from Star Trek. He was totally non-emotional, only logical. And sometimes that got him in trouble because you can overthink some things, and sometimes you need emotion to help you make a good decision. And then we see our friends on the left who are all driven by feelings. You know, how they feel about something is the most important, and logic or facts or truth doesn't matter. They only operate on feeling, and you see the problems that they cause themselves and the society around them. So when I break these things down and I look at our emotions, let's think about, when you think about the emotion of joy, happiness, contentment, love, kindness, when you think about those emotions, they are actually good emotions, aren't they? Hardly ever do people do bad things when they're feeling one of those good emotions. They have a tendency to come together, to connect, good at uniting goals and working together. On the other hand, when you have emotions like jealousy, hatred, rage, anger, those kind of emotions, when those emotions are the guiding force in a person's life, we see negative things take place. So I guess you could look at these things as guiders. Okay, so you have the emotions, the negative emotions, the bad ones, and then you have the positive emotions, the good ones. Then you have human beings that now have to take those emotions and combine them with desires. What are their drives? What are their desires? What do they want? So you see how this all starts to come together, right? Drive crimes, want crimes, human behavior throughout history, good and bad, and emotions driving us to different things. And this is what has come to us since the very beginning of humanity. We have had this. We have this duality of us. Now, when you see someone who is just totally calculating, right? Totally calculating, and they are emotionless, right? That might be someone who might be a dictator, and they don't care about how their policies affect people. They just care about what they want, right? And they're willing to do anything to get it, how they want things to be. So when we look at religion, we hear all the time that people say, well, religion was created to explain thunder and explain the stars and explain all of our fears. And that's why we know it's fake, because now we're smart enough to know that those things are not, you know, that rumbling is not the angels bowling. You know, it's pretty funny. That's what my mother used to tell me. When you heard the thunder, that was the angels bawling. You know, when we were a kid, we used to think, oh, it must be, right? That seemed pretty funny. But my point being is that people that do not want to see religion as having a value and a place, they want to be smarter than that. So they are the more people trying to be more intellectual. I don't think they go far enough when examining religion. I think one of the telling things, in every time I see one of these very, very smart, intelligent, deep thinkers come out against religion, they always come up short on their explanation, and that's where they get wishy-washy. And I'll explain that a little further, so we can understand it, what I'm talking about. So Stephen Hawking was an amazing human being. As much as he was trapped in a body that didn't function anymore, his brain was still amazing. His ability to think and to reason and to understand the things around him, the world, the universe around him, was amazing. And he had that ability and capability to understand things the rest of us couldn't. He was trying to figure out, you know, things on a microscopic level and things on at the center of atoms and how they all work together and what we're supposed to be doing here. And there was a time that he said, his thinking led him to believe that once he got to a certain point in understanding the world around him, he said the only thing that this all could have come from was from God. Because he got to a point when he his logic would not let him go anywhere else but that. There is no answer for this, for why we're here, why the universe is here. The only thing it can be is God. And I read that as a young person, as I was trying to understand my place in the universe itself, you know, why we're all here on this rock spinning around in empty space and we have all this going on here. And I came across Stephen Hawking, and I read, I think it's called A Brief History of Time, was one of his first books. And it gets pretty deep into the weeds on, you know, fusion and all that kind of stuff, things that are more than philosophical. But I read that in his book, and that's when he said it can only be God. And I thought that was amazing, because that is kind of where I take it to, right? But then a few years later, for whatever reason, I guess as he continued to think and try and understand, Stephen Hawking came out and said, actually, no, there is no God. There's just the universe. There might not even be, the Big Bang might not have even happened. It might just be, we have always been here. And this points out what I see as the problem with that scientific argument, because it is all intellectual based with no emotion involved in it. The emotional part is seen by many people like Stephen Hawking, and there's many others. There's lots of modern day people who are saying the same things. And what they say is, yes, no, there's no God. There's no God. Of course not. It's just what it is. And the universe has probably always been here. And I am not a thinker like Stephen Hawking. I don't have his brain. But I like to break things down. And I think I'm a pretty good connection between emotion and intellect. And to me, this is the problem I'm talking about with these very, very highly educated genius people out there who come to the conclusion that, you know, the universe around us is what caused low intellect people, cavemen and early humans, to come up with the God theories. You know, it's the angels bowling is what it is, because they didn't know what thunder was. They didn't understand the stars and the moons and comets, and the comet is an omen of something bad, and they didn't understand it because they were so stupid. Basically, they were naive and stupid. And now these modern thinkers are very educated, and they immediately jump on that theory as being 100% that people just didn't understand, so therefore they made up religion to find comfort, to give them comfort, right? Because they were emotional, and they couldn't figure out thunder and rain and the stars, so instead they made up this whole panoply of gods and greater beings and this, that, and the other thing. And that's where they tell us religion came from, and that's why they can reject it and say we are simply the result of chance, evolution, and chemicals that mucked around in the heat for a while and made cells and then creatures, and then, well, here we are, right? And this is the point at which I take their learned opinions very seriously, because they're big thinkers. They're very, very smart. They understand the mechanics of the universe as far as we can right now. Like, they still don't understand black holes completely. They don't understand, you know, why James Webb telescope is showing us galaxies that shouldn't be there, that are older than what we think the Big Bang is. And that's the new controversy. And they're trying to understand the mechanics of all this. You know, what's the subatomic particles that how they work, and this, and they have no emotion in it, and I do. So as I look at what they have to say, to me, this is the spot where they always go wrong. And you, from now on, when you hear these people talking, listen to their argument, because they go from a brilliant argument about the universe and the workings of the universe, when it runs up at the question of religion and a God, they all of a sudden they run out of steam, and they have like a pat answer, you know. And that pat answer normally is because of their intellect, and they realize the workings of the universe do not show the proof of a God. We don't see a God here. We don't hear from God, you know. So therefore, he really doesn't exist. If you're smart enough, you'll know he really doesn't exist. And it's all something else. Well, that's the problem. That's where they get to. And then they stop. And they stop usually when they get asked one particular question. See, in any intellectual pursuit, there's usually always a question or a series of questions that brings things to a stop, and then people have to think through them, right? The earth is flat. Well, that's what everybody believes, because that's all we could see, until somebody noticed something else and then brought up the question, yeah, but look at these heavenly bodies. They're round. They go around each other. None of them are flat. So we're probably not. So we had to ask questions and realize we're not flat, right? We're a globe, right? We're spinning a rock in space. But the question that always brings them to stop dead in their tracks is, where did all of this come from then? Where did the physical material, the gases that are floating endlessly through the universe, that come together to create planets and stars and the dust, and it accretes together, and gravity and all of this. Where did these things come from originally? Because everything comes from something. And the answer we usually hear from them, because it's confounding to them, because they can't step over the boundary, at least most of them can. I know there's some out there who actually do then go to the next logical thing is, well, if we're done looking at the mechanics of the stone and the rock and the gas and the subatomic particles, then we have to go to the next question, would be, well, what else could it be? What else could be a factor here? See, and our friends that don't believe in religion, they will not go there. They throw that out completely. No, religion has nothing to do with it, because there is no religion. Religion is a made-up thing, so therefore it's not fact-based. And that's the question that I ask. I say, okay, I get all the interaction of subatomic particles and all of these things, and the concept of the Big Bang, and I get all that. Where did all this material come from? Where did the space? Now, we could say space is empty, and it very well may be empty beyond where it has expanded right now. So think about that, right? The Big Bang, that's the whole idea, the Big Bang, boom. Time comes into being, and this whole thing is expanding. And it's creating time and space, and it's filled with material that exploded in the Big Bang. And it's working its way out further and further out. Well, what's it working its way out into? The emptiness of the universe. So where did all that space come from? Right? Where did all the material of the Big Bang come from? The rock and the dust and the gas and the chemicals. And this is where our very intellectual friends, they come to an end and say, well, maybe it's just always been here. Doesn't have to be a creator. Doesn't have to be grand design. Maybe it's always been here. Now, that is a cop-out. And that's what this long conversation has brought me to, is that, well, I may not be Stephen Hawking or any of these other people that are out there that are very, very smart and brilliant, that are trying to explain away religion. They get to that point and they go, oh, well, that's the answer. It's just always been here, because they will not take the next logical step and then involve something outside of what they can see. See, they're kind of going back to being flat earthers. They have this belief that this is all there is, and it's always been here, and it's not religion-driven, it's not God-driven. Those things aren't real. So when they run out of understanding of where it could have come from, in the face of what's obviously next, is to say, well, where else could it come from? Could it have come from an all-powerful creator, something we can't understand? They won't take that step. And I think that throws all of their pontifications, throws it right out, because they're not going the next step. You always have to go the next step. You have to test the boundaries of your idea, and you test all the rational things you possibly can. You test facts. You test the theories, and you come up with them based on your facts and the material in front of you and whatever it is. And then when you hit a brick wall, you can't go any further, This is when you have to then go, okay, I've exhausted all the things in front of me to make sense of this puzzle. I need something else. And that could be, it could be a bigger puzzle. It could be a bigger, something that we don't understand, something that we can't comprehend. And this is where I look at religion. And what do they say? God laughs in the ideas of your plans, and you'll never know the true mind of God, right? And if that's what we have been told by religion, if we have no place else to go, then one of the things we should do is turn to religion to see what it can offer us that can maybe expand our horizon to find an answer to where did we come from? Where did all this come from? Where are we going? Right? Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it's not there. The James Webb Telescope, they've just now found galaxies that they think are older than 15 billion years old. Well, that's impossible. We only have 13.5 billion years of time. So where would that come from? See, that was something unseen. It was latent evidence that we just saw now. We just uncovered it, and we have to change how we're making these calculations. And that's what I'm saying. These great minds have run into a brick wall where they're trying to explain all of this, you know, dark matter and subatomic particles and spin left and spin right and all this. And the problem that they're having is that they've now run out of those kind of things, but they will not turn and look at religion as a possibility, right? So I believe religion to be true, and that there is an all-powerful creator and a God and all. I do believe that. I've seen it in my life. I've experienced things that I can't explain away any other way. So I do believe that. That's my faith. See, faith is connected to your emotions. You have to have faith to believe there's something that you can't see that could be smarter than you, greater than you. It is, it's an affront to God to pretend he's not there. Well, sure, if you're religious, it's an affront. If you're not religious, then you're affronting what? There's nothing there to be affronted, right? This is what I was starting to think about recently. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about religion's place in our life down through, from our start to where we are right here today, and why so many people are trying to destroy it on a daily basis, because it does give us some structure. And that's where we're going to go next when we come back in a minute with more.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back, guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with Heal Right. Heal Right is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, Heal Right is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX Throat Spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back, everybody. You know, I do like to tell you there's going to be a couple other things I'm going to talk about as some products that are on the network here pretty soon. There's some new things that, and I, you know, I'm on the network. I've been blessed to be part of this network and to be on here and have my show on here. So when I see new things pop up, I like to explore them, figure them out. So is it something that I would tell you about, something I wouldn't tell you about? Because I only tell you what I find to be truth and what I find to be in my experience. So the Healthy Cell products, I've talked about them for quite a while because I experimented a couple years back. I wanted to be healthier and I wanted to not have constant sinus infections and all. And I, you know, I hear, well, you take this stuff and it's going to help you. And you don't know if it's really going to help you or not. But you know what? Just like I'm talking about, you know, religion, when we have to figure something out, you have to go take a look, right? To look a little closer. So I did. I bought the Healthy Cell product, the Immune Boost. I bought that and I started taking it. And it's like a gel and it's very tasty. I think it's like a black raspberry or something. I drink it straight out of the little bag it comes in. But people put it on ice cream. They put it on, you put it in your coffee, all kinds of stuff. Well, I started taking it and I'm going to say, I don't know, about 6 or 8 months in, I was getting a sinus infection every other month or two, that frequently, absolutely, and it was driving me crazy. And I started taking this stuff, and I noticed after 6 months, I hadn't had one. And I said, "Ah, that's just coincidence, right?" So I said, "I'm going to stop taking it." Well, within 3 or 4 months, boom, sinus infection, sinus infection, sinus infection. So I started taking this stuff again. And it's been several years, and I think I've had maybe two since then. And they went away very quickly. So I'm just telling you about it because it's good. They also make a REM sleep product, which will help you sleep. And they make Focus Factor, which is going to help you think more clearly. But they're on the network here. If you're looking for something to help you, I'm telling you, I use it. I like it. Healthy Cell products. All right. So when we left off at the end of segment one and our little get-together here, I was talking about religion as a concept and how what's the purpose of religion. So the purpose of religion and in human endeavors, religion was either created to explain things we could not, which I believe there's probably some truth to that. I mean, my mother was a wonderful human being, and she told me that story as a kid because we would hear this thunder. We lived at the shore and there was these big huge thunderstorms, and some of them were pretty scary, right? And when you were a little kid, and she said, "Oh, that's just the angels bowling," or she says, "That's the angels rearranging their furniture." That was another one. I think my grandmother told me that one. Now, did these two women, were they stunads? Did they really believe it was angels? But no, they were telling me a story. They were telling me something they had heard. So these kind of stories come to us down to the historical record. Is it possible that that was? Well, what would you think if you had no experience? Think about that in itself. You just come out of the caves and you're hanging around and here's these storms. Well, you'd have to come up with some reason for them, right? I mean, okay, it happens all the time. Why does it happen? You know, right? Of course. Or the earth shakes. Well, why is the earth shaking? You know, you didn't understand plate tectonics when they were just coming out of the caves. So I think probably there is something to that. That they saw the world around them and they made up stories. Now, we know that the constellations are real from Earth. When you look up, like my favorite one is Orion. I love the constellation of Orion. I think it's easy to see in the night sky. It's very powerful looking. It's I love the fact that, you know, the belt stars are so cool and how big they are when you learn about it. So yes, I really like it. But I don't believe in astrology. I mean, I don't believe, you know, your moon is crossing your third pattern and that means you're a certain way. But I do find a lot of coincidence in that. So if I break that down, constellations, when I look up and I see Orion, to me, I'm seeing a two-dimensional picture of a guy with a sword and a big belt and he's standing there. if you actually went up into space and got a space perspective, those stars aren't lined up. They're not two-dimensional. They're three-dimensional, and those stars are nowhere near each other. That's how it looks from our perspective, right? If you got up there, you would see that Betelgeuse is a billion light years away, and then the next one in that constellation is 800 billion. They're nowhere near each other. They just line up that way in our line of sight from Earth. So I don't believe in astrology. I don't think there's anything to astrology. I think that was made up by people on the Earth, looking up at the night sky and seeing all this movement and wondering, what are those lights? What are those things up there? And they say, oh, that one looks like a crab, and that's Cancer, and this one looks like Aries the ram, and this one looks like the bull, and this one looks like the scales. I can see where people would make things up to explain what they're seeing, of course. And then as time goes by, we start to say, intellectually, now we get smarter. We understand more about the stars. We know that they're moving. This is where the flat earthers come in. There was Earth is flat. Earth is flat. And you know, we never went to the moon. And all these people that come up with these things. There's an old saying out there called it's Occam's razor. Occam's razor tells us, with all things being equal, the simplest answer is usually the truthful one, right? So when we look at that and say, is the Earth flat? And there's no the water pours off the edge, and there's where does the water come from? No, of course not. We're on a globe. We're on a rock. We're on a planet. We can see all the other ones out there. We're just on another one, right? Of course, that makes perfect sense. But as we see people looking at these kind of things, I can see that would be a reality. Religion could have come from in part from. People trying to understand their world around them. And that big sound is not it's not a storm, a cold front meeting a warm front and having thunder. It is angels bowling or moving their furniture around, because that's something people could relate to. They understand, I know when I'm bowling or moving furniture around, it makes a lot of noise. And well, that's what the angels are doing. They're just bigger than us, right? So I see that. So that's one area that we can say, okay, maybe some of it came from there. But then on the other hand, you'd have to say, as human beings, as we got more educated, well, we decided to put down roots, didn't we? At some point, instead of just following the gazelles around or following the corn wherever it grew, we learned how to farm. We learned how to domesticate animals. Now that may have taken thousands of years across many generations. So somebody figured out, you know, instead of chasing the corn, when I see these little seeds drop down, when they dry out, that new corn grows from that. Why don't I try and plant some over here, and I don't have to go chasing it around. I can grow my own, right? So this is how people started to think. And this is where science really began, because that's a science, isn't it? The science of farming. And then we started to see, well, these animals are all running around, but they make new animals just like we do. You know, we notice we have these men and women in our tribe here, and they mate, and they have a new little person. Well, the animals do the same thing. What if we catch some of those animals and we keep them in an area where they can't run away, and they keep making new little ones, and then we have a source of food, right? So we started to learn, is my point. We started to learn and figure things out as we got more and more intelligent. So the idea of religion then, I think, takes on its second quality. I don't even want to... Let me just go with that thought for a minute. It takes on its second quality. And that second quality is that it can help to set boundaries and rules for behavior within a group, right? So here we now have these people, and now they're all living, and they create a little town, a little community, and they got some bad people in there. And those bad people come around and want to do bad things, right? They want to steal your crops. They want to take your woman, take your child, do whatever they want to do, bad things, right? So religion then, when we have this whole idea of religion, that there's something bigger than us, something more powerful than us, and then we had you know, the different writers throughout history who came up with the different rules, right, for life, the 600 rules in the Jewish Torah. It's 600 rules for engaging with the world around them. Now, some of them were because maybe some of them saw, well, we shouldn't eat certain things because people get sick. So therefore, God says we shouldn't eat those things. And, you know, God is all powerful and we should follow God's rules. And I think that aspect of religion is probably partially true as well, that people saw, hey, there's a religion, we're trying to figure the world around us, and we hear, there has to be something bigger than us, because it, you know, it can't just be us. We know that it's not angels bowling, but we see the storms, and sometimes the storms come and flood everybody and kill everybody. So, see, that sounds like somebody's doing that on purpose. It's got to be a god or multiple gods, right? Monotheism. So what would they do? They would try to communicate with those gods. For the purpose of what? So those gods wouldn't destroy them, wouldn't send plague so that they all die, wouldn't send hordes of enemies in to kill everyone and take everything, right? They would say, hey, whoever you are, greater power, okay, that created all this, can you help us? And then you get ideas of temples, you know, build a temple, because that's where, when this god comes to the earth, has to have a place to go. Because why? Because we all have to have a place to go, right? We have to have a house or a place to stay. So God coming down would have to have a place to stay too, right? I can see how people would rationalize that. That's the second way. I think religion helps to maintain a community by developing standards and norms. It is not good to take your neighbor's wife. It is not good to lie about your neighbor. It is not good to kill your neighbor, right? And these come down to us through religious stories, and we know the Ten Commandments. You know, the Ten Commandments now are the basic rules of living in a community so as not to have chaos. So we can look at it two ways. Based on what people saw at the time as, hey, these are the things that we need to do, whether or not there's a God. But if we say that God said it, or we believe that this is what God would want us to do, it has a little more authority, a little more moral authority, and people will follow along, and they won't hurt each other, they won't steal, they won't kill, they won't do this and that, and we'll have a better community, right? So religion serves that second purpose. And then when I think about it even further, I say, okay, that's taking it from the point of view that maybe there is no God, but we are making things up for our purposes. One, for our understanding, misunderstandings or non-understandings, our fears, or as a way to develop a set of rules and have a higher authority be in charge of that so that everyone goes along with it. And then you need, of course, someone to interpret that, and that becomes your priests and your prophets and all these people, and they're giving you what God wants you to have. That's under the auspices of that there is no God. That these are the arguments of the intellectuals, that is where these things came from, to explain that which we could not understand, and then to control us. Isn't that the big thing? Control. Religion is about control. Keep you from doing what you want to do. Not really. That's an excuse from people who want to do probably bad things, and they don't want to be held responsible for them. So therefore, you know, they complain about religion, and religion prevents you from having a good time. No, it really doesn't. It helps control the normal human interactions with other people or ourselves that could be detrimental, right? Because we can do bad, stupid things to ourselves and to other people, right? Of course. So those are the two ways that I'm looking at that. You know, that's where religion came from. It had its purpose and to do it. The third one, this is where it goes to the point of faith. Now, on the third view of religion, you would say that religion is real, that there is an all-powerful God, creator, that created all of this and put us here and created this universe. And this is the one where our intellectual friends can't go here, because they can't necessarily see things. They want to see proof. You know, that scientists want to see proof. You don't just, you know, say something is, you have to see that it is, right? So, and this is where faith then takes us to the next level, because we've run out of explanations for all these things, because no matter what we see or hear, the ground shakes, the sky rumbles, and we say, okay, we can't say it's angels bowling, it has to be something to do with the weather, so we pray to the gods for the weather doesn't come and wipe us out. But then there comes a point in humanity where there are people who are thinkers and who do sit and stare at the night sky and try and figure out, okay, what is it really? Why am I here? Do I have a purpose? I mean, at some point I would think mostly all of us probably do that. I mean, I know I have. I know I have. When things happen in your life, you say, why did that happen, right? So religion, I think the third part of religion is when people were trying to think to the next level and they ran out of evidence-based things. And I said, well, what else could it be? So we hear a lot about the grand design, right? Grand design of the universe, that all of these things interacting with each other so perfectly is something that it's not random, right? It's not random. It's interconnected, just like all the look. If you want to see the universe, you want to see the universe on a microcosm, on a small level. Look at your own body, and look at the myriad number of systems and organs and nerve endings and thoughts, and all of these things come together to make our body function. If you took away the organs, you wouldn't function. If you took away the blood, you wouldn't function. If you took away the nerves, you wouldn't function. If you took away your thoughts, you couldn't think, right? So for me, a person of faith, I look at that and I think of a saying that came to us from church. And it, as a kid, it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I didn't really have a place for it because I couldn't understand, you know, who we are. And you know, look at us. We're people. We've got hands and legs and feet and heads. And then there's this God, you know, this all-powerful God that can create all of this universe, can create all the animals and the stars and the moons and all that. And there's a saying that God created man in his image. Now think about that for a minute. Created him in his image. There's a lot there to unpack. Does that mean God looks like us? See, so there's the physical image. You know, my boys, for better or worse, they look like me, right? They look like me because my wife and I made them. It was our genetic material got together, and there's my boy. Even my daughter, I think, looks like me, only she's very, very pretty. But they're all very smart. They all are good, decent people, but they do look like me. And I know my friends, they got boys and girls that look like them, and they're in their image because they are made from them. So we have the physical image. So are we in the likeness of God? Are we made in the image of God, as in physicality? So that would mean God has a head, hands, feet, and what floats around in the sky. And this is another thing that the anti-religion, so what's this old white guy with a beard floating around in sky, and that's what he's doing? No, that's not going deep enough into understanding it. And this posed a problem for me. You know, we're made in the image of God. Well, does that mean God kind of looks like me? And I don't mean Joe Pangaro. I mean, does he look like a human being? And he's omnipresent in the universe, but he has hands and feet. What would he need him for? He, you know, created things out of another thing. No, what it tells me is that we have to think about the phrase and what else it could mean. Do you see how I'm doing this? I get to the point where, okay, I've run into a wall now saying that God made us in his image. And then you start to think about it and you say, well, God doesn't need a physical body, though he had one in Jesus, right? Because that had a purpose though. But God, on an everyday, day-to-day operation, doesn't need a physical body. God is God, is an all-powerful being. So made in the image of God must mean something else that we do not see. It's out of our realm of understanding. What does that mean? But that doesn't mean we can't think about it and say, what else could it mean? And then you try and find, if you get one or two or three different things that come to mind, then you explore those. That's how logical thinking and getting to the next level. How did these guys come up with building, it's just going to sound strange, but building the nuclear bomb to tap nuclear energy like that? Well, somebody had an idea of how that happens. They had to figure out how, you know, the electrons are zipping all around, and when you smash them together, they release this. So I had to think of that first and then do experiments to see if there was anything to it. And then eventually they found a way to do it. So the mind can create things that hadn't existed before. through trial and error, through thinking, through planning, and that is how those and that's how everything has been made, right? So when I think of the term, when they say we were made in the image of God, if it doesn't mean the physical image like a body, then what could that mean? What other thing could image mean? So being made in the image of God can be the imprint of God, and we are in the flesh. So the imprint of God is what? The ability to think, the ability to create. They tell us through religion that God loves us, and that is the most powerful. All the things God wants is for us to love each other as he loves us. So therefore, you're adding now in emotion, which we have. Humans have emotion. We make decisions based on good and bad. We covered that in the first part, right? So in the image of God, is it a mind, the image of God, the ability to think, to ask questions, to make observations, to figure things out, to interact with other people, to be loving to other people, to be kind to other people, to help, to work together as a community. Is that the image of God? Right? The all-powerful God who can create all of this. And I tend to fall on that. I tend to see that that is the image of God we are. Although, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, and you know he is the Son of God, come in flesh to come down as the weakest thing possible for a God to do is to come as a living being and suffer the vagaries of life, of being a human creature and feeling emotions and suffering cuts on your hands and legs and being murdered and killed, right? How much more could any God connect with his creatures than to come down and be one? And people, how is that possible? Well, if he can create the Big Bang Theory, all of empty space, all the stars, all the gas and everything else, and us, I'm pretty sure he can do it. That leads me to the next thing that we hear that our science friends don't like, right? They say, you'll never know the mind of God. And I think that saying gives them fodder to turn around and go, oh, well, when you hit a brick wall and can't explain how come we don't see God, he isn't showing up to help anybody, he lets little children have cancer, what kind of God is that? So your answer is, well, you don't know the mind of God. He goes, and so they say it's a cop-out on the part of people of faith. And I'm saying it could be. It could be a cop-out, except when you take the time to understand the tenets of your religion, all of them. See, because this is one it's easy to fall on. People pray. They want a job, so they pray to God, get me the job. Their child has cancer, and they pray, God, please take the cancer from my child. They have something impending bad in their lives. Please, God, take this away. And it doesn't get taken away, right? The little child has cancer and dies. That's a horrible, terrible thing. And then people spit in the face of God because you didn't do what I wanted, right? And this is what people don't always understand about their own religion. And what does that mean? Because I didn't understand it. My daughter, when she was born, she had a liver condition. I was in children's hospital. And there were tiny little children in there, 2 and 3 years old, ravaged by cancer. Absolutely terrible. And they're walking around with the IVs, and you see their bodies are and you say, how could God let that happen? But then I came across the priest who was actually pretty good at explaining my religion to me, right? Because they don't always do that. You don't always have great priests or teachers, right? You have to go find them. You have to go take the effort to go ask a question and then go seek an answer. And I would get mad when bad things happened. When my father died, and I've told you, he died young in my arms, I cursed God and I fought with God. And when I came across not just one priest, I call him one priest, but it's an amalgam of 3 or 4 really good priests I've met in the course of my life that start to explain to me that you got to understand, God does not want anything bad to happen. God doesn't want a child to get cancer. God doesn't want someone to get killed in a car accident. God doesn't want any of those things to happen. God created this world for us to be here and to love each other and to do what he asked us to do. We got off on the wrong track, going the wrong way. Sin was introduced, sin was introduced, and away we go. So now we have all these maladies, and the key is, and I don't want to get preachy here, I'm saying this is my understanding of this third part of religion, the actual, hey, it's real, is that, yes, God can intervene at any moment and save someone or put the brakes on the car or take away the cancer. We see it. We see miracles happen, right? We see the saints have performed miracles through with the power of God, right? Through them, God doing it has saved people, has done things. And that's what they look as the miracles to say, you know, this person was very, very good and they could be made a saint. But once I started to understand that God doesn't sit here and go, let that kid die. I don't care. The reality is your faith is what this is all about. Having faith in your God means when something horrible and terrible is happening, you turn towards God for comfort. You ask him to be with you through this horrible thing, however it's going to come out, because things come out how they're going to come out. We are flesh and blood. We live and we die. And sometimes we get sick and we get cancer or we get hit by a bus or we fall in a well. I mean, these are just natural happenings to human beings who are alive in this world on this planet. And the whole idea of faith is that, yes, God could pull that child out of the well. But actually what happens is that family that suffers that terrible loss or a child with cancer or a mother who dies of a heart attack or whatever, as that family goes through that natural occurring piece of human existence, God is there with you. Because you have to understand, what does the religion tell you? This life is not everything. You're here for a period of time to experience life, to love God, and do the right thing to the other human beings around you. And at some point, there is a reward when we go off this planet in death, and then we are reunited with God and our family and all that. So religion has those components. Either we made it up or it's real. So I see three components there. And religion is being destroyed now in our modern world because it does provide a background. It does provide comfort. It does provide rules and behavior modifications. And we see government, men and women who want to control you. Well, they can't control you if you're following the rules of religion. So they have to get rid of religion, destroy religion, and make the state the new religion. And what's that sound like? Communism. They have all done that. They take your guns and they get rid of your God, and then they come after you. All right, so I hope we had a little bit to think about here. This was a little heavier of a program, but I'm glad we had this time together. And I'm going to be thinking more about it. I hope you think more about it. So we'll see you in the next time. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem.